Let's begin. For once, we do not dissolve from black. Instead, we are assailed by white, blinding and blank. In this pure infinity, there is nothing we can discern. There is nothing we can hear. We are in a liminal space, devoid of life. Until a voice shatters the silence.
Of all the trees that grow so fair, old Avalon to adorn, greater are none beneath the sun than oak and ash and thorn.
Our viewpoint spots something in the distance. We zoom in, and we begin to recognize the outline of a person sitting on emptiness, with legs held to their chest, rocking slowly back and forth. Patrick, how does Wayland look as we enter their Chandry?
The camera rotates around them, and the clothes that Wayland is wearing in this moment are just a plain white shirt, gray pants, no shoes. And their eyes are darting around, looking at nothing and everything all at once.
As the camera rotates around again, there is someone standing behind you, and he begins to sing with you.
Sing, oak and ash and thorn, good sirs, all of a midsummer's morn. Surely we'll sing of no little thing in oak and ash and thorn.
Samwell, on the other hand, looks as fit and as sturdy as he did the day the bulwark sank. He's got a long, I'd say like full beard, short cropped hair. He actually looks well fed and well rested for the most part. He is wearing just a normal white blouse, a pair of black slacks, knee high boots, just a brown overvest. He sits down, one leg is stretched out, the other's up on the knee, his elbow resting on that knee, the other arm kind of tucked in.
I can't get that song out of my head. And I think it's the only part of me that's holding on anymore. Who are you? I'm you. And who am I? Just a scared child, trying to make sense of the world.
And he reaches out and he takes two fingers and taps your forehead. The world around you changes again. The camera kind of does that panoramic view behind you. How old are you, Wayland, as we go backwards in time?
I don't think I rightly know. If I had to guess, based on the other children's ages, who actually know when they were born, probably 5 or 6.
And in front of you is another child. Except they're not sitting in the same position that Samwell was sitting in. In fact, they're hanging upside down.
This small, pale, freckled child with blonde hair and gorgeous green eyes just appears out from the underbrush of the trees, surprising you.
Boo!
Audra! Don't do that!
Well, don't be so easy to scare.
Little Wayland with his little...
His little brogue.
His baby brogue.
So what are we doing today?
Well, I was in the marketplace, and I happened to see that the fruit vendor was here.
But he only comes on Saturdays.
He's here for special today, because the queen is out and about. I saw her on the promenade. Come on, let's go.
Audra, we're gonna get in trouble again.
And I'll just have to come get you again. It's no problem. Come on. Don't you want some fruit?
Little Audra is running through the streets in her little simple dress. And we see the marketplace. Cobblestone streets, little vendors, stalls, people hawking. And fresh fish caught this morning.
Yes, then I've got some wonderful bread here.
Come and get your fresh bread! You like bread?
Only a few maggots in it!
And we see this fruit vendor. Now, they have apples mostly, but there are also a few strange-looking fruits. And by strange, I mean something you'd find in a tropical area. And all of a sudden, a cat, a little tiny kitten, that hops up on the vendor's stall and pads over and sits in front of the vendor and meows cutely and adorably. Oh my goodness, look at your little paws and your little ears. And the kitten is getting all sorts of affection. And as the camera is turning to kind of view that from the side, we see a small hand reach up and grab one of the fruits and then take it away.
Reaches up again.
Another one. Finally, the vendor's like, oh, all right, that's quite enough, little thing. Here, go on. And takes a little piece of bread or whatever and like tosses it, and the kitten goes after it and vanishes around the corner. And we follow it down an alleyway where tiny little Samwell is sat with a couple of pieces of fruit in his lap. And the kitten passes by a pillar and turns into the child again. And she runs over and she slides on her knees.
So?
You were right. You're always right. I should just know that by now.
You should listen to me more often.
She takes an apple and bites it.
We see, standing in the alleyway with them, older Samwell and older Wayland.
That's right. We grew up on the streets of Balak. There's nothing else before. It was just always Audra and I, scrounging the streets for scraps wherever we could.
Hey, Audra?
Hmm? Yeah?
You're not going anywhere, right?
Going anywhere? No. Why?
Well, it's just that I had a bad dream last night, and I couldn't find you, and you weren't there, and I didn't know what to do, and I don't think I'd do well on my own. I don't think I could do any of this without you.
Oh, well, I don't think that's true. I think you could do it on your own, if you tried. Why, are you going somewhere?
Of course I'm not going anywhere. No, where you go, I go. I'll never abandon you.
Well, good. Then you can always trust me to protect you. Okay?
Oh, okay. You promise?
If I promise, then you have to promise, okay?
Okay.
Audra takes her hand in yours, the non-sticky apple one.
I promise.
I promise.
And then in that moment, we can see the magic that binds these two together. It is innocent. It is pure. And it is ageless. It is the strongest binding ever forged. It is a child's promise.
Who would have ever thought a child's promise could bring so much ruin? Aye. To everything after.
That night,
Yes.
And he turns around to face the opposite direction. And when you do, it's a completely different scene. You, as young Samwell and young Audra, huddled together in a very, very tight quarters with other children, packed like sardines in this area. You can hear voices and hear sounds of clamor and battle, but they die down very quickly, and heavy footfalls are coming down the stairs, and there's a lantern that's held aloft.
Get him out of there.
The locks on the doors that are holding you are struck by some kind of blunt instrument and broken and shattered, and the doors sling open. Someone crouches down, although it takes them a little while because it's so low to the ground, and the lantern is set down, and a face peers down, and it's Roland, but he's much younger. Say probably in his 40s. A few less scars on his face, a few less wrinkles.
You're right, wee ones.
And he reaches out his hand to help you out of this area. Audra tentatively reaches out and touches his hand and then recoils.
There, there. You're safe now.
And she grabs it and he pulls her out and sets her down.
Samwell is holding on to her hand until she lets go, and he's still reaching for her when Roland reaches his hand down.
Come on, lad. You can trust me.
That's what Bay said.
I know. But look at me, all right? I promise. Never lay a hand to hurt you.
Okay.
The hand forward.
The moment that you touch Roland's hand, the camera watches this shadow, this cloaked figure, arise from out of Roland, give Roland a nod, and then transfer into the boy.
That was the moment.
It was, when Paga chose us.
And there is this feeling that washes over Waylon. And the feeling is that of laying in a field on a warm summer's day. And as you are laying there basking in the warmth of the sun, a cloud comes over, and the instant cool and chill of that warmth being zapped away. But no malevolence. There's still a comfort. The embrace of night.
All right. What's next?
We see young Waylon's life in little segments here and there. You growing up among the sea dogs, both you and Audra. We see the induction officially into the sea dogs when you were just come of age, around 17, 18 years old. You're now in a shipyard. And there are logs that are getting turned into beams. There is a mast being carved. You're among the people building a ship. And we zoom in on you at a table as an older version of you and an older version of Audra are looking over these blueprints. And you're describing to the builders the Nightingale. And the camera kind of backs up and you're still talking, but we can't hear that anymore because we're back at Wayland and Samwell watching the scene.
All of them idiots.
Come on now. They had their merits. They just lacked the imagination to make it a reality.
Yes. Yes, they certainly did.
If I recall correctly, we had to jump in and get our hands dirty right about...
A camera pans around again, and we see Samwell underneath the ship, coat off, just shirt, pants, boots, sawdust and soot and oil covering everything, and is actively planing the wood that is going to make the lance for the Nightingale's mechanism.
Lots,
She no be a house. Oh, aye? Give me that. Gotta treat her kind. You ain't chopping carrots. You're playing in the wood, all right? Nice. Long, firm strokes. But gentle. You got to let her know she's in good hands. And also, you got to not cut the chassis at a 60-degree angle when the blueprints clearly state 45.
Oh, fuck, we sound like Jory.
Quiet. If I had to, I would chalk our dislike of his particular quirks down to self-shame. Aye.
We're outside. We're at the shipyard on the dock watching the ship. And then finally it's like christening day where Audra and Waylon, they've got the bottle of champagne or whatever, and they're about to smack it against the hull and do the whole thing. And you're standing next to Samwell.
But she was our pride and joy, she was. Indeed. Look at us. We were just... arrogant, showboating, trying to prove something.
Consumed.
Yes.
And that must lead us to... oh, gods.
No. No gods have any hand in all that follows.
We are in a cottage, a house, some kind of small living area. It's very quaint, very cozy, but also very rugged. Bare necessities kind of deal. And you're in a living room of sorts where there's a hearth going, there's some food on the table, and it's you and Audra and Roland. We don't hear what's happening just yet, but Samwell has this smug look on his face and he's saying something quippy or highbrow, and Roland is sitting there with his bread crumbling in his hand and is shaking his head no. Meanwhile, Audra is watching between the both of you, just eating her food as quietly as she can. And that's when we come into the actual conversation.
Father, you must understand that this proving of my capabilities is nothing less than a testament to how well you have raised me.
I did raise you, and I thought I'd done so for you to be a lot smarter than this.
This is a grand opportunity that Elaine, our queen, trusts me to execute this mission. I can't understand why you would hold any trepidations.
Boy, you don't know what's waiting out there.
Father, to plunge a knife into the soul of the ATC, to carve into the heart of darkness at its very core, we have never had a better opportunity than this. They have been a thorn in the side of Avalon, nay, the world, since their inception. The greatest shame our country has ever known is that Rourk spawned from this land. That I might have the chance, that we might have the chance to undo that shame.
Rourk is just as much of an idiot for going out there to see what power he could find.
What? The monsters you've told us about?
You don't know!
The demons that lurk beneath the waves. I am all too familiar with your fairy tales.
I ain't just talking about those that walk the depths, Sam! There are things that haunt them waters worse than any sea lord you can imagine.
Da. I can do this. I promise you, I can do this.
The camera cuts over to Audra as she visibly flinches.
Don't make promises you can't keep, Samwell. Look, I ain't been one to put my foot down much while raising the both of yous. But if there's one thing I shan't abide, it's this. Stay here. Fight the fight here.
You've dealt with them before. You've dealt with the ATC before.
Of course I have.
And?
And they're easier dealt with here.
In what way? A full frontal assault?
Their navy grows larger by the day. If you cross into their territory, there's no guarantee you'll be coming back.
There's no guarantee that any of us will survive here. When you encountered the ATC, what did you have?
I had my ship and my crew. Then that is where you and I differ, Father. Really? And how's that? You went in with liabilities. I am going in with pistol and saber.
And Samwell launches himself out of his seat.
Samwell!
Rounds towards the door and storms out, slamming it shut behind him.
Fuck!
He, like, puts his hand on his forehead and shakes his head, and Audra comes over and puts a hand on his shoulder and says,
"Da, he won't be alone. I will be with him."
Aye. Then that should be bringing me comfort.
He puts his hand on her hand and clutches tightly.
Audra, he's going to be tested, and it might break him.
She nods.
Make sure he comes back. Let you both do.
See you soon, Da.
Gives him a kiss on the forehead and runs after Samwell, leaving Roland at the table, and we pan backwards, and Samwell and Wayland are standing there as the scene dissolves into black.
That could have been the last time we ever saw him. That could have been the last thing I ever said to him.
Not a day went by where I didn't think about that.
And he was right. After all that bluster and bravado, he was right.
In front of you, Wayland, is a crew of people who have just been captured. And as you go down the line, because it is your job to brand these people with a hot iron that has a P on it, you stop in front of none other than Jesse Nakansa. Jesse, your hat has been taken from you. You are shackled at the wrists with maybe like 2 chain links worth of movement. And there are 2 soldiers next to you, and they grab your hand.
And Samwell looks at you and presses the brand into your hand.
Such fire in your eyes. You should have just fucking killed me.
No. No, I don't think I will.
You're gonna regret that, fuckface.
Then I'll count on it.
Piece of shit.
Shan't I?
Oh, my God.
You know, it's a shame. You've all taken this better than most.
And he spits at him.
You get cuffed on the back of the head by one of the officers.
Fuck off.
Samwell wipes the spit.
Better yourself, if you can. And one day, you might just get what you're seeking so desperately.
We call it freedom, you worthless slag.
Freedom always has a price. Get them back on their ship.
You want to cash the bill for me, asshole? It's all yours.
The scene transitions, and all of the crew of the Rose are back on their ship, and we can see the ship sailing off as the Emancipator waits.
Samwell, I think, is just standing at attention, just watching them sail off.
And you hear the telltale sound of a spyglass opening up. That clack, clack, clack. We're watching side profile Samwell, and then we see the spyglass come up. Camera tilts just to see someone else in a wig and a very proper, well-kept tricorn hat and the regalia of an ATC commandant. And they are looking through the spyglass at the Rose.
Compensating for something, are we, Commandant?
And he shuts the spyglass and hands it to you.
Samwell holds his hand out, and there is a glint in his eyes.
We see from your point of view, a man-o-war comes out of the shadow of the rocks, full sail, all guns ready. The HMS Relentless, chasing the Rose.
Tell me you didn't. Tell me I'm not seeing what I think I do.
Your eagle eyes must be going. I see the pride and joy of Rourke's fleet.
Why was I not informed of this?
Why, Master Flint, that's above your pay grade.
Bullshit, it's above my pay grade. Why send the Relentless after them?
You're too young to remember, but the Rose was a thorn in our side for quite a while before you came along. And now that she has bloomed again, we'll be making sure to deadhead her this time.
Commandant, forgive my candor, but why not simply kill them when we had them? Why, of all people, send Scarlet's bloody ship to chase them to the ends of the earth? Why torture them with hope?
Freedom always comes at a cost.
And that cost has already been paid in blood. We uncover piracy, we brand the perpetrators accordingly, and set them off. If we find them again, then we pluck the weed, root and stem. What purpose does it serve to sear their flesh, if not to encourage them to seek a better path? They are not beasts to be put down at first snarl. They are people.
People who have broken the law.
Yes, but we are here to show them their mistakes and provide opportunities to follow our example.
And when they don't fit the mold, we exterminate them.
This breaks every protocol, Commandant. On my ship, we operate by the book.
Good thing it's not your ship.
We follow orders.
My orders were to smother the fire before it starts.
Sir, with all due respect, mark my words. The embers that remain will start a blaze that will consume us all.
Consider them marked. That is all, Master Flint.
Call off Captain Scarlet's war machine. Tell the Relentless to cease its actions. Do not do this!
Speak one more word against mine, and you'll be up against the mast while I whip you back into shape. Back to your post, Master Flint.
As you command, Commandant.
And Samwell stands at attention, violently salutes, slams his hand down by his side, turns and walks away.
As Samwell walks away, the camera pans to their back, and they walk in between current Samwell and Wayland.
Do you know what's horribly funny about all this? Do tell what the irony is, because I'm not sure I see it.
We condemned him to death, but truly, I think it was Jesse that saved us.
Huh.
If we hadn't met him that day, witnessed this moment, and begun to suspect the true depths the ATC was willing to sink to, I don't know that we would have looked twice at the Bulwark's manifest. We might have just kept gathering information and found ourselves falling further down the rifle spiral.
You know, you just might be right. I suppose you'll have to thank him the next time you see him.
If he doesn't kill me first. Oh, I suppose in a way he already has.
No. Not you.
The camera turns and we see what happened on the Bulwark.
The flashes of red and blood. The slaughter of the entire crew. Audra, full feral, claws out, half-transformed, tearing through flesh and bone. Samwell, eyes wide with rage, guns firing in a blaze, tearing through anyone he could get his hands on. The releasing of the prisoners. The subsummation of the ship.
And the shot that killed Samwell. You hit the water. We see the split that happens between Paga and you both. The current carries you into the undertow of a sinking ship and then spits you out on a beach
Shade leaning over Wayland, bringing him back, pulling his hood up and walking off. And we see Wayland, or Samwell, the man who was Samwell Flint, look around, take hold of his surroundings as he's spitting out sand and seawater, and begins to walk. And he walks along the beach, and he finds a small port. We see him talking to a fishing boat captain. There is an exchange as they realize they don't have any money, and they look down and tear off three of the buttons from their coat, the ATC coat, and put it in the captain's hand. Sailing in this small ship across the sea, finally winding back in Avalon, still walking, broken, bedraggled, hair has grown out at this point, probably down to around the chin.
Grown a mustache to show that time has passed.
Mm-hmm, exactly. However, in this case, this individual does find their way into a bar and, borrowing a dagger from one of the patrons, finds a mirror and shaves his face.
Finally, the scene changes again, and we're back in that cottage from before. Although it's a little less lively. It's a little drab. It's a little cold. But the door opens, and Wayland, you walk in. And sitting in his chair, in the big, fuck-off, comfy chair next to the hearth, is Roland, pipe in hand. And he looks over at you, and he says,
"It appears that your pistol and saber didn't serve you as well as you thought they would, did they?"
Just shakes his head. And there's tears.
"I'm sorry, Doc."
He sighs, a big puff of smoke comes out, he taps the pipe, stands up, takes three steps, and he's there, hugging you at the door.
"I'm so sorry. It's all right."
And then time passes again. And it's Wayland cleaning, doing dishes. Hair has grown out longer now. And I think Roland walks through the door.
"So, seems the rumors are making the rounds. Samwell Flint went down with his ship."
Wayland stops cleaning the dishes.
"I suppose you'll be needing a new name."
"What name would I go by if not my own?"
"Well, when I found you, Samwell Flint was just the name you came with. Always regretted not being able to give you one myself, you being my son and all. Looks like I get my wish after all. If you like, you can have my father's name, Wayland."
Yeah, I think I'd like that."
"Good. But as it goes, you can't have the name McAlbrand. I won't be sharing that burden with you."
"Why?"
"Got time for a story?"
"Well, seeing as I'm supposed to be dead, I think I've got all the time in the world, huh?"
He takes out that pocket watch again, and we see that Kraken opening it, and there's a mirror on the inside. But we don't hear the story.
That'll come later.
Time passes again, and we see Roland and Wayland getting ready to prepare for a hurricane. The camera kind of pans over to see this black, gray line advancing on the horizon. The wind is starting to whip up. The fronds are starting to get kicked around. The shutters are moving.
Waylon's hammering planks across the windows.
Hey, da! Toss me that bag of nails.
Catch! That grey wall is advancing fast. We should get going.
I'm sorry, the what?
It's the grey wall of the storm, lad. Always closer than it looks, and always hits you harder than you expect.
A grey wall, huh?
The void changes once more, and we are in a very familiar bar. Although the curtains are a little different. And we watch as Wayland is sitting in a corner by himself, his rifle up against his shoulder, wearing an ATC coat that has seen so many better days, and the door opening as Jesse walks in.
As that scene fades, we come back to that void in the beginning.
So, why don't we revisit your question? Who are you?
I'm Waylon Greywall, son of Roland MacGalbrand, former captain of the Nightingale. They whom sundered the bulwark, chosen of Night Paga.
Then you have everything you need.
And as he says that, you see that the tips of his fingers are starting to become transparent.
Wait, hold on. What do you mean everything I need? We just relived our greatest and worst hits, and you're gonna call it quits now?
Indeed.
But there's so much you left out. How are you here? How do you still have half the mantle? Why did our soul split in two? How is Shade our godparent?
You know everything that I do. Or did, when I was you. We have reached the moment where I can no longer follow. For you are no longer me.
Samwell, what is all of this?
This, Wayland, was where we part.
Where we part? So then what do I do?
You know who you are.
I?
Good. Then it's time. I died long ago, Wayland. I deserve to stay dead.
Sam, I can't just leave you behind. You're a part of me.
Not anymore. That day, on the bulwark, we were rent in two.
So what? I'm just meant to continue on and pretend like none of it affects me.
You're meant to live, Wayland. My story ends here. But yours? Yours is still a work in progress.
Well, great then. I can be a work in progress while I'm stuck here all alone now because I still don't know how the fuck to get out.
And I think as Wayland says that, there are cracks that appear in the void. Glass starting to break.
What is happening?
You're reclaiming yourself. Jonah has no hold over souls that have regained their identities.
Is that how it works?
Why do you think they're called lost souls, Wayland? Jonah was only promised my soul, not yours.
Wayland holds out a hand.
Sam, if we truly are two souls, then who's to say we can't find you a vessel?
Wayland.
No, you know what? Fuck Jonah. He can't always walk away with what he wants. Come with me.
Wayland.
What?
Stop punishing yourself and let me go. I appreciate it. I do. But you need to move forward now. Your soul is your own. You don't need me to make you whole anymore.
What do you mean?
I can't come with you. But what I can do is give you this. It's the only thing I can remember before Aldra.
Before?
He reaches out his hand and taps your forehead again with two fingers. And you get an image of a horned figure with the same golden eyes as you. The warm smile of a woman who smells of lilies in spring. And then a flash of red over your eyes. And that's all the memory is. Just those prominent key senses.
And I think as Wayland opens their eyes and look back, all that's left is just a trail of ashes blowing away. And Samwell is gone.
What is that supposed to be? Right then.
And then you hear Jonah's voice ring through.
Look alive, lad. We got company.
Look alive indeed.
Well, friends, I do apologize for the abrupt opening, but I wanted to try something a little different, because this is technically a removed story from the grander narrative. I gotta keep you on your toes somehow. I hope that answers your question as to where Wayland has been, and now that they have found themselves again, we'll see what that means next time. Until then, remember that things are not always as they seem, and be safe and well.